The Revolution with Jim and Trev presents our resident survival expert, Tim McWelsh. Now, here are the boys.
Hey, you're back in the air with Jim and Trev. Phone lines are open at 785-846-7647. Trev, we've been talking about bucks and bows. You know, I've always had a desire to actually make my own arrowheads. So far, I just buy them in the store.
I don't believe that at all. No. Anyways, we are talking bucks and bows on today's show. Just now, being joined, though, by Mr. Tim McWelsh.
He's primitive.
He is our resident survival expert. And if you don't buy his books, listen to his interviews, and read his stuff, you will probably die this year in the woods. Take it to the bank. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jim and Trav. Great to be back.
Do you think people are going to die?
Well, see, here's the thing. Don't take life too seriously because you never get out alive.
Right? Oh, God. You know,
don't, I saw that on a bumper sticker or something.
Yeah, and people, I want you to know, his survival tips and techniques are much better than his jokes. And so,
that's true. That's very true.
You know, we were talking during the break, Mr. Tim, by the way, to check out, see if he has any classes available, go to advancedsurvivaltraining.com. Also, check out his survival blogs.
He got several books.
He's got a ton of books, but check out outdoorlife.com/survival, and he has an online university, outdoorlifeu.com. All right, so, you know, Jimbo was coming back this past weekend, had a bunch of fish, and they pretty much took advantage of him.
Yeah, they did. The,
price-wise.
The airlines just gouged me.
You were telling us a cool story, and fill us in more and our listeners about bringing rocks back from California. Why were you doing that?
Well, you know, I can't top the utility of Jimbo bringing back some delicious, fresh, frozen fish that he caught with his own two hands and a hook made out of a safety pin and dental floss for the string and you know, the whole MacGyver fishing rig.
Oh, totally.
But, that reminded me, you know, putting a ton of weight in carry-on. My wife and I flew back from the Southwest with carry-on bags full of rocks a few years back. And, of course, you know, everybody that interacted with the bag wanted to know why the bag was so heavy and what's going on. And, you know, they're looking in the bag. Why is there a bag full of rocks? And it was obsidian.
Mm.
So I don't know if you guys are familiar with obsidian. It's sort of like nature's glass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I want to interrupt you right here. I was actually fly fishing out in New Mexico, and there's a big inactive volcano, and it's called a caldera or something like that. And I found some obsidian there. And you're right, it looks like a big glob of glass, mm-hmm. which I promptly brought home. They told me I couldn't, but I did.
Yeah, this isn't quite like the Hawaiian thing where you're not allowed to bring back lava rocks on account of them being cursed and whatnot. This is just a nuisance. They tell you don't bring back the obsidian because they don't want you walking around with rocks, but you know, on planes and stuff. But you know, this stuff you can find it all down the West Coast, and you can find it literally all the way around the Pacific Rim. Any place that's had a lot of volcanic activity is likely to be a spot where you'll find obsidian. And this is a beautiful type of stone, and it breaks like glass, and it's as sharp as broken glass.
Oh, really?
And, you know, for a lot of traditional archers, this is one of those things that just connects them even deeper to their ancestors, and it connects them to the hunt to actually chip their own stone arrowheads. And many states actually allow those for legal hunting points. So this can be a legal method of taking, you know, using your own homemade bows and arrows and arrowheads.
Yeah. Now, I have this glob of obsidian, okay? And, you know, it does not look like an arrowhead. Do you have to somehow be able to cut that? Or do you flake it?
What tools would you use? Yeah.
Weird, you know, for a long time, people didn't know how stone points got made. About 100 years ago, the anthropologists speculated that Native people would heat up the stone and drip little drops of water on it, which would cause the thermal shock and pop off little flakes. But the truth is actually just more straightforward than using fire or alchemy or any kind of wizardry. You're literally just using a hard implement that's pointy, like the tine of a deer's antler. Just use one tine as a handheld tool and literally push off little flakes, push off little chips of stone, and work that piece of stone down until it's thin, triangular, and has a uniform sharp edge all the way around the perimeter.
Yeah. Now, is there a grain in the obsidian?
There's a grain in it, Jimbo, that we can see.
Uh-huh.
It's beautiful. There's so many different kinds of obsidian. There's every color in the rainbow in that type of rock. But one of the prettiest ones you'll find out west is the mahogany obsidian, and it's real pretty red streaks with black. It's almost like a tiger stripe stone. And you can chip it in any direction. You don't have to go with those lines.
Oh, wow.
That's just the way that it forms, that it has these lines in it. But they're not fractures, so we don't have to baby them. We can chip, you know, right across them or parallel, perpendicular, don't matter a bit.
Mm. All right, talking with our resident survival expert, Mr. Tim McWelch. Hop on jibbitrav.com. Check out all of his blogs and interviews. All right, so we're making these arrowheads out of this obsidian. Now, going back like the Native Americans and stuff, and even people now that are proficient at doing this, and let's say we're pretty good, and we're making these arrowheads. You know, balance is key in bow hunting. If it's not proportionally correct, if it's heavy on one side, it's not going to fly true. What do you think would be the accuracy? If you were good at making an arrowhead, how far do you think you could accurately make a shot with a homemade arrow, an arrowhead?
Well, that's going to depend on the archer, Trav. If this is something that you're really good at, if you can make uniform arrows, eliminate variables. You know, if we have a real accurate scale, we can weigh the arrowheads, we can weigh the arrow shafts, we can make them very uniform. So we're basically shooting clones of the same arrow over and over again. And then if we can get all the stars to line up right and a beautiful shot presents itself, then, you know, it's not weird to go, you know, 30, 40, 50 yards.
Oh, wow.
With these traditional arrows, assuming you've got a powerful bow to launch that arrow.
Mm-hmm. Now you've obviously studied this somewhat. And I've often wondered this, you know, oftentimes on television, you see where the Indians have shot the arrows and then leave them in the people or whatever. Did the Indians actually go back and gather up all of their arrows before they left?
Be smart if they did.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise you got some guy out there flaking arrowheads.
Yeah. You know, let's put it in modern terms, Jimbo. We can't make any blanket statement about any group of people, but if you had some archery tackle that you'd invested a lot of time and effort into, you know, you're going to get your arrows back, right?
Oh, yeah.
No, actually, I use that to find my way home.
Yeah.
It points the right way up.
Yeah. Point you in the right direction.
But like, archers of the past have the same problem that archers of the present have, and that is you're going to lose arrows. Mm-hmm. They are going to disappear underneath the grass. They're going to disappear into the brush. And I'm sure that's how, you know, we find arrowheads from ancient times. You know, when you find a beautiful arrowhead just kind of laying there in the sand or laying there, you know, on the dirt after it rains and washes it off, I bet you some archer lost that, you know, centuries ago. And that was just the one that got away until erosion made it surface again.
Wow. Well, now, have you ever made arrows or arrowheads?
Yeah. Yeah, you bet. And you can even use some modern materials in a pinch. If you had to make your own arrowheads, let's say you found a cast off beer bottle in the woods, mm-hmm. we can actually break the bottle and chip glass the same way we chip obsidian. It flakes in the very same manner. And you could even use glass to practice your skills. You know, if obsidian or flint or any of the other good napping stones were hard to come by.
Yeah. But just think about that guy that made the first beer bottle out of obsidian. It was wonderful.
That was wonderful what you just said. I know Tim did a little. That was great.
A courtesy laugh.
All right. So what I want to know is how much were you charged to bring all the obsidian back from California?
Well, those were days gone by. And in ancient times, they did not charge for carry-on.
What?
So we got away with, Lord only knows, we must have 50 pounds of rocks shoved into two backpacks. And they just scratched their heads and you know, pushed us on through, and we stuffed them in the overhead bins and hope to God there wasn't turbulence. And
yeah. Yeah, if you're like,
if you, rocks fall on somebody's head.
Yeah. Well, if you're like Trav and I, you gather up all these things, you bring them home, and next thing you know, they're out in the yard as a landscape item.
Decoration. How many arrowheads did you make out of them?
You know, I was generous. I actually shared them with classes, and we got, we just got dozens and dozens and dozens of arrowheads, and I've still got little pieces out in my stone tool production area, my little flint napping pit. I've still got chunks of that rock out there. It's kind of a pretty, like a shiny gray stone that we collected.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really interesting, but I was down in Old Mexico hunting white-tailed deer and walking along, and I found a little bird point. You know, the sizes of arrowheads, you would think, why would you do something this small? But obviously, they were just after birds and didn't want to do an overkill, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you've got a great big stone point, they've got your little birdie in too, and, you know, half of them goes flying off into the bushes, not flying anymore, you know, the bird flies, but, you know, just careening, you know, spiraling out of control. Yeah, yeah, you wouldn't want to. You don't shoot a squirrel with a 50 cal.
You don't? Oh.
Well, I, you know, unless you're just after the tail, like you put on your antenna on your car or something.
Yeah.
You know, like people used to do the raccoon tail on their car antenna.
You bet. Hey, we've been talking to Tim McWelch. He has a book called How to Survive Anything.
That's right. He's got a bunch of books, but check him out online, advancedsurvivaltraining.com. Sign up for some of his survival classes. Also hop on outdoorlife.com/survival to read all of his blogs. Plus, he has an online university, outdoorlifeu.com. Finally, look him up, jimandtrav.com, for some more awesome interviews, also blogs, little insights from Mr. Tim himself. Now, Mr. Tim, you got Twitter. What's your handle?
You bet. It's Little Bird Shooter and Happer Guy. or you can look me up at Tim McWelch, T-I-M-M-A-C-W-E-L-C-H.
That's right. All right. Big shout out to Outdoor Life. Also, Mr. Tim McWelch, Outdoor Channel, Sportsman Channel, World Fishing Network. Got to get to a break. Mr. Tim, you're so awesome, buddy. We love you.
Likewise, gentlemen. Great to be back.
Keep your pants on.
Stay right there. The Revolution with Jim and Trav will return.
Coolest place in the world.
Right after these important messages.